beach that Ed and Sabrina had agreed on, and Sydney was planning to wear taupe with bronze accessories. Sydney put a deposit on the club immediately, so that problem was solved. The club had its own caterer, so she didn't have to find one. They'd found a church they liked. All they needed now was a wedding cake, Ed's florist, and a photographer. She and Ed were making the gowns for Sabrina, Sophie, and herself. It was all turning out to be much less complicated and stressful than she'd expected. Steve and Sabrina were very low-key and not demanding, and weren't looking to show off, despite Sabrina's high standards and fashion. She wanted her wedding to remain simple and very private. Steve was fine with the idea, and his parents had agreed. Sabrina had done most of the work and research herself, and had her own ideas about everything. So, with the main issues for the wedding resolved and deposits where they needed them, Sydney could focus on the collection and take care of the remaining wedding details later. They had time. But the pressure was on for Fashion Week, and she was at work till midnight every night. Ed was often there even later. She was taking a break one night, eating a salad at her desk before working on the show some more, and picked up the Post and turned to page 6 as a diversion. The usual names were there, the cheaters, the hot romances, the new babies both in and out of wedlock, who had a new house or lost one in a divorce. When she saw Kira's name jump out at her, and wondered what nastiness she and her sister were up to now. She knew that Kelly's divorce was costing her a fortune, and Jeff was already engaged to another woman. The mention of Kira was brief and struck Sydney as sad. It said that she was in rehab for an alcohol and substance abuse problem that had led to several recent arrests, and she had been sent to rehab by the court in lieu of jail. Sydney had had her own problems with the law, but it seemed a terrible waste that someone with so much in her favor and to protect her should be so lost. Kira was 34 years old now, had no children, had never been married, had had a slew of bad boyfriends, and her life was totally without merit or accomplishment. Sydney hoped that she could turn it around. She'd never known her to have a drug problem before, but maybe with all she had inherited, she had lost her grip and gone wild. Neither of the twins seemed to be using their father's fortune well. One was squandering it on a gigolo husband and a bad divorce, and the other one was deep into drugs. Sydney was relieved to be well away from them, and glad that she hadn't run into them in a long time, and hoped she never would again. Their history together didn't seem real anymore. Too much had happened since. She said something about it to Sabrina when they talked the next day, and she agreed about what a mess they both seemed to be, and what miserable lives they led. They'd been so anxious to take everything away from her, and then lost it themselves. I heard from someone the other day who knows her that Kelly does a lot of cocaine these days, too, and Jeff is threatening to take the kids, Sabrina told her mother. It's pathetic. At least he wants them, Sydney commented. He probably wants them for the child support she'll have to give him, Sabrina said cynically, and then added in a gentler tone, I'm sorry about the house, Mom.
So am I, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's past history.
And the future was looking bright. Since its first show, Sydney Chin had been an astonishing success, and it was exceeding all expectations and predictions. Ed had told her that his family was very pleased. They had increased her equity and given her a big raise and a huge bonus. There was a certain satisfaction in knowing that whatever she had now, she had earned herself. It hadn't been given to her by someone else, and no one could take it away. She would never put herself in that position again. Bob arrived in New York 2 days before the show and took her to dinner the night before Valentine's Day. She was running crazed, but had agreed to have dinner with him, but afterward she had to go back to work. He was staying with her at her new apartment, which they both agreed wasn't glamorous or beautiful, but was an improvement over the last one, which she had been thrilled to leave.
"Ready for the big day tomorrow?"
Bob asked her across the table, and she looked instantly anxious. "God, no. We have 6 dresses to finish sewing tonight. Our appliques and embroideries just came in this afternoon, and one of our biggest models just canceled. She broke a leg skiing in Courchevel yesterday, and we don't have a replacement for her yet. She was due in tonight." He smiled as he listened. He knew it was the jargon of the trade and standard fashion week panic. In the end, the dresses would be done, the models would be there, the sewing would be finished, and in Sydney and Ed's case, the reviews would be great. Sabrina was going through the same thing where she worked. And Sophie was just as busy, or almost, with her junior line. It was the norm in their world.
"Are you staying at work tonight?" he asked,
and she nodded. There was something he wanted to ask her, but he didn't think this was the night. She was too tired and too stressed, and she would be in Hong Kong in less than 2 weeks. He could ask her then. He was happy to see that she always wore his ring and never took it off. She called it her lucky charm and had become superstitious about it. Bob kissed her when he dropped her back at the office and went to her apartment to sleep. It amazed him how much he loved her. He had never felt that way about any woman before, and in spite of the crazy business she was in, they got along well. The only problem they had was where they both lived, but they seemed to have a system that worked for now, and managed to see each other every 3 or 4 weeks, mostly thanks to him, because he had to go to New York anyway for meetings with clients, though not as often as he went for her. But he couldn't go without seeing her for long. He woke up for an instant when he felt her slip into bed at 4 in the morning, and then out again at 6. By the time he woke up fully 2 hours later, she was long gone and hard at work. Chapter 19. Predictably, their show was even better than the first one, and the reviews were fabulous. Sydney and Ed were ecstatic. They both went home to sleep after the show, and the following night, Ed, Kevin, Sydney, and Bob had dinner to celebrate at La Grenouille. Their show had been called the best one of the season, and people were talking about their possibly winning a CFDA Fashion Award, which would be a major coup. It was like winning an Oscar for an actor or producer, and the orders were already rolling in. Bob stayed a few more days after the show and then headed back to Hong Kong. He was already making plans for dinners with her and special outings— a casual evening with his children, and a cocktail party with his friends to introduce her to everyone. Sydney was nervous about it. He was so excited to have her meet everyone that she felt overwhelmed. She talked to Ed about it on the plane after they settled into their seats. It had been a whirlwind 2 weeks with busy days ahead in Hong Kong.
"I hope you have your plane karma under control," he warned her,
and she laughed nervously. She never totally forgot the terror of the flight that had almost crashed and then landed in Nova Scotia. It had been fateful for her since she had met Paul there.
"I hope so, too," she said anxiously.
"Bob acts like this is a homecoming instead of just a visit. I haven't even met his kids yet, and I'm not signing up for another bunch of kids who hate me."
"Stop worrying about it. They're sane. Those other two witches aren't, and never were."
He thought about it for a minute then, and asked her a question.
"Would you ever live there?"
She shook her head without hesitating. "I'm married to you and the business," she said, and he smiled. Kevin was on the same flight with them, traveling in business as a gift from Ed. Since it was a long flight, she and Ed were in first, which Sydney was enjoying. It was one of the luxuries she had missed and had come back to her now.
You don't have to be married. But you could live anywhere, you know. We proved that when you were under house arrest. You can send your drawings in by computer. We can FaceTime, as long as you come back for Fashion Week twice a year. Our design team can handle the pre-collections. You don't have to live in New York if you don't want to.
I want to, she said, sounding adamant about it. I have two children there, and I'm never giving up my life for a man again, or being dependent on someone to take care of me. That's the lesson of the past 2 years. I never should have given up my career when I got married. It was a huge mistake.
So don't give up your career. I don't want you to do that either.
He looked worried at the thought. They had a booming business now that depended on both of them.
I'm just saying, you could live anywhere as long as you have a computer and fly to New York several times a year. You would probably have to spend about a month before each Fashion Week in September and February. It's workable if you want to. You could be flexible.
Ed was trying to work it out for her so she could spend time with Bob.
I don't see how that can work, she said, frowning. Besides, I'd be moving there for Bob, and that's too big a change to make just for a man. And then he dies or dumps me, and I'm screwed and have to start all over again. I just did that.
She looked unnerved at the thought. She was traumatized by what had happened to her when Andrew died, and she didn't want to put her life in any man's hands again, even Bob's, whom Ed knew she loved.
I'm not going to give up my life, my career, or my city for anyone. He lives in Hong Kong. I live in New York.
What if you could do both? Ed asked her calmly. She didn't answer for a long moment.
I don't know, she said quietly. It scares me. Are you trying to marry me off? She asked him with a grin. Did Bob ask you to talk to me?
No,
but I can see how much he loves you, and you can't expect him to do all the traveling forever. And these days, even in our business, you can live where you want to and do a lot by computer. I just thought I'd remind you of that, to think outside the box.
It was a generous gesture on his part, and she was touched.
Would you move to another city for Kevin?
Ed looked startled at the question. He'd never thought about it with anyone.
I don't know, he said honestly. It would depend on how much I love him and the city. I might try it for a while to check it out.
She didn't answer him and sat staring out the window, thinking about it. Bob had proven himself for the last year and been there for her, but moving to Hong Kong would be a lot to ask. Fortunately, he never had. It was a decision she didn't want to make. They both watched movies and slept on the flight, and Ed went to visit Kevin in business a few times. When they got to Hong Kong, Bob was waiting for her at the airport. Ed and Kevin were staying with Ed's family, who had sent their Bentley and driver for them. Bob drove Sydney to his place in his Aston Martin. When they got there, his apartment was as beautiful as she remembered from the video he'd sent her.
"Welcome home," Bob said as he kissed her, and they stood on the terrace and looked at the view of Hong Kong below.
The apartment was like a movie set. He poured champagne for both of them and handed her a glass.
"I've waited 11 months to get you here," he said, looking happy.
It felt like a dream to him, having her with him in Hong Kong, and as she sipped the champagne, she couldn't help remembering that he had stuck with her through the worst months of her life, including preparations for a trial and the possibility of prison, and he had never let her down once. The years with Andrew had been easy for both of them, but Bob had been through everything hard, including 3 months of incarceration in a miserable apartment. And now she was back in the lap of luxury again, but it wasn't hers, it was his. She was acutely aware of that now, and the risks, and she didn't want to do that again. "What are you doing tomorrow?" he asked, always respectful of her plans and the demands on her, and willing to adjust. That was new to her.
"I have to help Ed set up the show. It's the day after tomorrow," she reminded him. "We have to pick the models and have fittings with them, but it won't be as crazy as New York."
It was a benefit, not New York Fashion Week, with critics to impress.
"We'll have time to do everything after the benefit," he said easily.
She was staying a week after the fashion show just to be with him, and his life was so seductive as long as she didn't think about meeting his children. He had an enormous marble bathtub in a huge bathroom, and they soaked in it together before they went to bed. He poured her more champagne, and she was already half asleep before she climbed into his big, comfortable bed and put her arms around him with pure happiness in her eyes.
"I love you," she whispered,
and fell asleep instantly as he turned off the light and smiled. His life was perfect with her there. Sydney woke up late the next morning. Bob had gone to the office and let her sleep. She had to rush to meet Ed at the hotel at noon to choose the models. There were a fleet of assistants he'd hired already unpacking the clothes, which had arrived in good order, and Kevin was directing two young assistants while a dozen seamstresses waited to fit the clothes to the girls. They had just finished choosing the models when Ed's mother stopped by to thank them again for doing the show for the benefit. Sydney was struck again by how beautiful she was and how young to have a son Ed's age. She and Sydney were almost the same age. He and his mother looked like brother and sister. She had exquisite skin, and she was incredibly chic. She wore French haute couture. Ed had learned all about fashion from her and from going to couture shows with her as a child. They were finished with what they had to do by 6 o'clock when Bob came to pick Sydney up. He invited Ed to join them for dinner, but he said he had to have dinner with his parents. He and Sydney agreed to meet the next morning at 9 to go over details before a dress rehearsal at 10. The models they had chosen were all pros. A few didn't speak English, but Ed spoke to them in Mandarin. They were all beautiful girls and wore the clothes well.
"Half the room will be my relatives tomorrow night," Ed commented, laughing. "My parents have 4 tables for the family and 2 of friends."
"I have a table too," Bob said.
He had invited his favorite people and closest friends so Sydney could meet them. As they got into his car, he said they were having dinner at home that night. She was relieved to hear it. She was tired and jet-lagged. It had been a long day, and she couldn't wait to relax and soak in his huge tub.
"My kids are coming to dinner tonight," he said casually.
Sydney sat up straight in the car with a look of terror, and he smiled.
"Except for the one in medical school in England, of course, but Charlotte is coming in from Shanghai. They all want to meet you, Sydney," he said as he glanced at her.
"Don't look like that. They're not going to eat you, I promise."
But it was obvious she didn't believe him, based on past experience with the twins. She had hoped to wait a while to meet his children. But he wanted to get it over with quickly so she could relax. He knew how worried she was about it. She had dreaded it for months. Her fears about his children were a huge stumbling block for her to commit to him.
"When are they coming?" she asked nervously.
He checked his watch.
"In about half an hour. It's very casual. You don't have to change."
She was wearing jeans.
"I had a local restaurant cater it, so all you have to do is eat and relax."
She felt like Daniel walking into the lion's den when they got to his apartment, and she went to put on a fresh blouse, brush her hair, and wash her face. She was brushing her teeth when the doorbell rang, and she wanted to throw up. She was sure it was them. She walked anxiously into the living room and saw Bob with his arm around a spectacularly beautiful girl, prettier than any model they'd hired that day. She was wearing a chef's jacket, checked pants, and clogs,
so Sidney guessed easily which one she was. And Bob was very proud when he introduced his oldest daughter, Francesca, to Sidney. She had a warm, open smile and looked instantly apologetic.
"I'm so sorry I'm a mess. I was helping a friend out at his restaurant, and I came right from work."
She shook Sidney's hand politely. She looked almost like a Eurasian version of Sabrina, and they were about the same age.
"I came right from work, too." Sidney smiled at her cautiously and felt foolish for being so worried.
Francesca couldn't have been nicer or more gracious and modest. She had none of that nasty, foxy-eyed, "I'm-going-to-eat-you-for-dinner or stab you in the back" look of the hateful twins and their mother. Francesca was as gentle and friendly as her father.
"Your show tomorrow sounds amazing," Francesca said, visibly impressed. "Dad invited me, but I have to work. I'd already signed on to fill in for a friend before he asked me. Besides," she said shyly, "I don't have decent clothes. I spend my life in the kitchen."
She was totally unassuming like her father, and much less sophisticated than Sidney had expected. She could have been anyone's daughter, not one of the most successful men in Hong Kong. They were talking quietly about the bistro she wanted to open when Bob's son, Dorian, walked in. He beamed the minute he saw Sidney as though he had been waiting to meet her all his life. He had them all laughing half an hour later with the description of his recent visit to his sister in England, and masquerading as a doctor so he could make rounds with her, and almost finding himself in a delivery room by mistake. He was funny and very welcoming to Sidney and wanted to know all about Sophie and Sabrina. He said they sounded very glamorous, and she assured him they were down to earth, but with jobs in fashion, and worked very hard.
"I never wear the right thing," he said awkwardly. "Dad took me to some fancy event a few months ago. I lost my dress shoes somewhere, so I had to wear sneakers, and he was very upset."
He smiled at his father, who rolled his eyes at the memory of it.
"I was only upset because the shoes you lost happened to be mine, and I had lent them to you."
"Oh, that," Dorian said, and grinned guiltily at Sidney, who laughed. He was an adorable young guy with an aura of mischief and innocence about him that was hard to resist. And as they were talking, a little elf wandered in, wearing what looked like pajama bottoms, a paint-splattered pink sweatshirt, and pink high-top sneakers. She apologized profusely for being late and said her flight from Shanghai had been delayed. She had pink streaks in her hair.
"And they stole your clothes on the flight?"
her father asked disapprovingly.
"No, these are mine. I was working on a painting till the last second before I left, but they did lose my bag. They're bringing it later."
She was smaller than the others and looked a lot like her father, and reminded Sidney a bit of Sophie when she was younger. She had the same self-deprecating way about her, and surprised, innocent eyes, and a permanently childlike aura about her.
"My daughter Charlotte, otherwise known as Charlie," Bob said to Sidney,
who was totally at ease by then, and smiled at her. She looked like a ragamuffin, but a totally endearing one, and had her pink-streaked hair in pigtails.
"She always dresses like that," Dorian explained to Sidney. "Your daughters in fashion would never approve of any of us, and my sister Amy wears hospital pajamas all the time. We're a disreputable lot," he said, smiling broadly, and his sisters laughed.
"We're a mess sometimes, too," Sidney said honestly. "Sometimes I wear my nightgown all day when I'm drawing, and so do my girls."
"At the office?" Charlotte looked impressed.
"I go to the bank sometimes, in my pajamas, and Dad gets mad, but I like painting in them."
Bob glanced at Sidney ruefully, and she couldn't help laughing. They reminded her of Peter Pan's Lost Boys, and none of them seemed to care about clothes, which was fine with her. They were each charming in their own way, and she could see why Bob said they all had fun together.
"Actually, I wear my nightgowns at home, but I'd love to wear them to the office," she responded to Charlotte.
They told her about the family dogs then, who had all misbehaved, and one ate an entire buffet of food before the guests came, which inspired more stories. She was enjoying them enormously when dinner was announced, and they walked into the dining room to see a beautiful spread set out on china and crystal, with gleaming silver and flowers on the table. Despite their mischievous tales and haphazard style, she saw that they all had beautiful manners, were kind and polite to her, and were close to each other and crazy about their father, who adored them. It was a family full of love and good feelings, and rather than excluding her, like the twins, they all welcomed her warmly into their midst. She felt totally comfortable with them. The food was delicious from one of the best restaurants in town. Bob had planned it carefully for her and had gone all out, and the conversation during dinner was warm and funny. They teased each other and their father, but without malice, and seemed perfectly happy to include her. They were the opposite of everything she had experienced with the twins. She was sorry when all three of Bob's children left at midnight. Charlotte was staying in the apartment downstairs, Francesca was going home to her boyfriend, and Dorian was meeting up with friends. Sydney told them she hoped to see them again before she left, and meant it, but Charlotte said she was going back to Shanghai the next day. Francesca and Dorian promised to come by the next night. They all hugged her warmly when they left. She was stunned. She turned to Bob when they were alone in the apartment again with a look of amazement. "You have the nicest kids I've ever met."
"They're good kids. But I wish I could get them into decent clothes. Dorian's right, they looked a mess."
They were all slightly eccentric, but in a very appealing way, and Bob had obviously let them be themselves.
"No, they don't," Sydney disagreed with him. "They just look like kids, and they don't have jobs you have to dress up for. I think they're wonderful."
They were smart and affectionate and unpretentious.
"I haven't had this much fun in ages. Sophie and Sabrina would love them. I wish we could get Dorian and Sophie together. She's
kind of a bumbler about guys. You missed the last one, who was a total neurotic mess."
"I don't know why, but Dorian can never find decent girls. They're always crazy, or just out of rehab, or homeless, or have some huge problem he thinks he can fix."
"That's Sophie, too. She always ends up playing psych nurse to some basket case."
"Dorian, too. And he borrows my shoes and loses them every time," he said, laughing. "I think he hands them out to homeless people or gives them to his friends."
They both laughed, and Sydney felt as though 1,000-pound weight had been lifted off her shoulders.
"I was terrified to meet them," she confessed.
"I know," he said gently. "That's why I invited them here tonight. I wanted to put you out of your misery quickly. They're not a very scary group. I knew they'd like you. I just didn't know how you'd feel about them. They're not as glamorous as your girls. Dorian is right about that, too. You should read his novel. It's actually very good," he said with fatherly pride.
"I'd like to. And Sabrina always disapproves of the rest of us, but she can let her hair down, too. I think Steve will relax her a little. And it's her job to look like that."
She had acted like the fashion police since she was a little girl.
"They all told me how much they love you when they left. They think you're really cool."
He was pleased and proud of Sydney, too, not just his kids.
"Well, I think they're cool, too. Very, very, very cool. And so sweet."
"Well, that's over. Now you can enjoy them the next time you see them," he said, pleased and relaxed. The evening had been a success.
"I enjoyed them tonight,"
she smiled, and he walked over and kissed her.
"Let's go to bed," he whispered to her. "I gave up tonight for them. Now I want you to myself."
She laughed and followed him into his spectacular bedroom, and he closed the door, and they fell into bed with each other, smiling and laughing and talking and teasing, until passion overtook them, and they forgot about his children, and thought only of how much they loved each other. It had been a perfect night, and now she could relax and spend her time with him in Hong Kong. She had nothing to fear. The monsters she had been so afraid of had turned out to be charming, funny, loving, bright young people. They had overcome a huge obstacle that night, and it only made her love their father more. Chapter 20. Sydney told Ed about meeting Bob's children the next day while they set up the benefit together, checked the room, did a sound check, and went through the rehearsal with the models. "You were right, they're adorable," she said, looking totally pleased with the evening. She was still coasting on it, and had seen Charlotte at breakfast before she went back to Shanghai. She had come to Hong Kong just to meet Sydney, and said she was glad she had. She gave her a big hug before Sydney left for work, and told her that she had to come to her next art show. "I told you so," Ed said, pleased with himself. "They're a terrific family. They're all regular people. There isn't a snob in the bunch. Bob isn't a snob either. He's just a very successful guy, and he likes the good life more than they do. You should see the cars they drive. Dorian drove a 10-year-old mail truck all through school. They're all kind of hippies. Maybe it's a reaction to the money." But she liked that about them, and Ed did too. It made them seem younger than they were. There was an honesty about them that was very appealing. And Sydney complimented Bob on them again that night before the benefit. She had come back to the apartment to change and was wearing a beautiful evening gown Ed had made for her for the event. It looked like vintage Chanel. It was finely pleated black silk with pale pink satin panels, and was spectacular on her slim figure. Everything had gone smoothly at the hotel that afternoon and was in good order when she went backstage before the show. Ed was wearing a tuxedo and looked very elegant, and Kevin was wearing one too. The guests had started arriving. Ed and Sydney checked all the models themselves. His mother came backstage a couple of times, and then everyone was seated at the tables and the show started. They had rolled out a carpet for the models to walk on, which wended through the room so everyone could see the clothes. It was perfect, even better than the New York show, because it was more relaxed. Ed and Sydney got a standing ovation when they took their bows, which were always quick. And then dinner started, and an orchestra played, and people danced. They had paid a fortune for their seats, for a good cause, and they got their money's worth. Sydney enjoyed meeting Bob's friends more than she'd expected to, and had a good time with them at dinner. He had invited four couples, bankers, lawyers, a doctor, and a journalist. They were accomplished people and warm and welcoming to her. And when Bob danced with her, she was pleased to discover he was a wonderful dancer. They were among the last to leave the event at 2 a.m. The assistants had already packed up the clothes, with Kevin's supervision, and from then on, Sydney was on vacation and had nothing to do except play tourist with Bob around Hong Kong. They sat on his terrace again until 3 in the morning and talked about what a success the benefit had been, and then went to bed. In the morning, he was dressed when she got up and anxious to show her around. They took the tram up Victoria Peak above the Chin's home. He took her to the famous ladies' market and shopping at Causeway Bay, where all the best stores were. They went to the best restaurants for lunch and dinner. Finally, after 4 days of visiting Hong Kong, he got up the courage to ask her what he'd wanted to since Valentine's Day and before. They were having dinner at Caprice and were drinking champagne. He didn't want to wait till the last night to ask her.
"I want to ask you something, Sydney," he said cautiously, and she could see that he was nervous. She hoped that he didn't give her an ultimatum or offer her something she couldn't accept. She had a feeling she knew what he wanted. "I know what happened and how badly your life has been shaken up for 2 years. But I have to ask you this, so I know where we stand."
She almost winced when he said it, not wanting to hurt him or turn him down.
Is there any chance that you would ever consider retiring again, leaving New York and moving to Hong Kong with me, with or without marriage? Your choice?
She looked at him sadly after he asked her. She didn't want her refusal to end what they had. It was too precious to her to lose. But she couldn't lose herself again either. She couldn't ever let that happen, even for him.
No, there isn't, she said gently. She wanted to be honest with him. I don't want to give up my career again. I love what Ed and I are doing, and I don't want to lose that, but I don't want to lose you either. I just can't do what I did before, give up working, become dependent on a man, and risk everything I am. If anything went wrong with us, I'd be screwed all over again.
He nodded and understood. It was the answer he'd expected, and the question he felt compelled to ask in case her response was different from what he thought.
I would never let that happen to you, he said kindly.
He didn't want to be critical of Andrew, but they were very different men, and he would never leave the future to chance. He was even slightly younger than Andrew had been. He told her that he knew that one day he would die, and he wanted to leave his affairs in order, and those he loved well cared for and even protected from each other if necessary.
I can promise you that. I'm sure you would, but if I give up my job for you, I'd be totally dependent on you. If I didn't work, I'd have no money. I did that once. I can't do it again. It would be a terrible mistake. And I don't want to be beholden to you. I want to be with you because I love you, not because you support me.
She had loved Andrew too, but he had supported her completely and very generously. And when he died, it all ended. She didn't want to be in that situation again.
I'm not even fully back on my feet yet. I'm just getting there. I want to make my own money, not live on yours. I'd only marry again if I could be responsible for myself. It doesn't have to be equal, but I have to make enough to take care of myself.
She had never realized how important that was until she lost everything.
I understand, he said quietly.
And then he thought of another question he'd been wondering.
Could you work from here?
Maybe, she said honestly. But she didn't tell him that Ed had told her she could, and even suggested it on the plane over. She didn't want to move to Hong Kong just for him. It was too much to do for a man. She wanted to make her own choices. She loved him and knew she wanted to be with him. She just didn't know where or how or under what circumstances. She wanted to let it unfold between them, not force it or make huge sacrifices for him, like giving up New York and no longer living in the same city with her daughters, or retiring, as he had asked her. It could all blow up in her face if something went wrong. She knew instinctively that if one of them made all the sacrifices, it wouldn't work. And she was too afraid of the risks now. Life was too uncertain. But she didn't want to be unfair to him either. She wanted fate to make some of the decisions for them, not create them all herself, or for him to dictate the terms. But she recognized that he wasn't dictating. He was asking.
It's possible, she answered his question about her working in Hong Kong. It will depend how the business develops. It's too soon to know.
That made sense to him, and she had left the door open. He liked that. It wasn't the answer he'd wanted, but she hadn't turned him down flat either, which he'd feared she might if he pushed her. He had tried to be careful not to and to be respectful of her. They both needed a relationship based on mutual respect, which they'd had so far.
I love you, she said,
looking at him intently. I'm certain of it. I just don't want to make any big mistakes this time, or overlook something important. You wouldn't give up your business and move to New York. I don't want to give up mine after we just started it. I think I would always regret it if I did. And he knew she was right. She was a smart, sensible woman who had learned a hard lesson and paid a high price for it, and he respected her career and her talent as much as his own. Would you spend time with me here? Maybe if we take turns traveling, it will work better in the long run. But he had business in New York frequently, and Hong Kong was far for her to come, and more difficult if she wasn't working there. I'll try, she said honestly. I love being here with you. It's a wonderful place. It's just a long way from New York. He nodded and smiled at her and kissed her fingertips. I love you, Sydney. We'll find a way to make this work for the long haul. I want it to, he said, and she nodded. She did too. She just didn't know how. Let's give fate a chance, she said softly. He kissed her on the lips then, and they went home a little while later and made love. A lot had been said that evening. They didn't need to say more for now. Ed called her in the morning when they got up and asked if she had time to see him that afternoon. Anything wrong? No, the orders are going great in New York. I just want to ask you something. Do you want to come here? She suggested. To be honest, I'd rather see you alone. How about Felix at the Peninsula at 5 o'clock? It was a chic bar she'd been to with Bob. That's fine. I'll have Bob drop me off. I'll take you home afterward. She told Bob, and she had no idea what Ed had on his mind or what he was going to say. She thought about it all day, and Bob kissed her when he dropped her off. I hope everything's okay. He could tell that she was worried. He said it was. She smiled at him and hoped so too. The purpose of the meeting was a total mystery to her. Ed was waiting for her at a quiet table. They both ordered white wine and chatted for a few minutes, and then Ed looked at her seriously. I have a proposal for you, and a question. I had a long talk with my parents this week. They have an idea, and I think it's a good one. It wasn't what I had in mind, but the more I think about it, the more I like it. I wanted to open a store in New York once we're established, and I still want to. They want me to open a flagship here, and then open New York a year later. I thought it was crazy at first, but it's not. It would get us a lot of attention. As you know, many of the big-name fashion brands have opened flagships in Beijing. I don't want to. If we're going to do China, which I think we should eventually, I want to do it here, at Causeway Bay. Wow, she said, thinking about what he had just shared with her. She didn't think it was crazy at all, and he had terrific connections here. A store in Hong Kong could be a huge success and position them a little differently from everyone else, which she liked. When are you thinking? In about a year? Now, he said, and stunned her again. We're hot now. We're new. If we start now, we could be open here in 6 months and do a flagship in New York a year later. My father owns a piece of real estate that would be perfect for a flagship here. It would be the hottest store in this city. It was an ambitious project, but she could see why he was excited about it. She was, too. It could be a brilliant move for them, especially with his family behind them, who were so powerful locally. Do you really think we could have it open in 6 months? It was a lot to ask. They were both based in New York. I do. With the right person in charge of the project and opening it, I think it's realistic. Hard work, but possible.
We'd have to find someone, she said, considering what he'd said.
There's only one person I know who could do that, he said earnestly. You. You don't have to stay here forever if you don't like it. You could stay for 6 months and then come back to New York, if you still want to. That's what I wanted to ask you today. Would you do it, Sid? You're the only person I would trust to open here.
He was looking straight at her, and she felt as though he had just blown her across the room and knocked the wind out of her. But she could see what it could do for their business. It might be the smartest move they'd ever make. He was right, and his family weren't fools either. A flagship in Hong Kong, followed by one in New York, could send them into the stratosphere. And if they had the real estate, and he had their backing, how could they lose? But was she ready to move to Hong Kong for 6 months? That was the big question for her.
How soon do you want to know? She asked, looking at him intently. It's not forever, but it's still a big move for me, even for 6 months. Apparently, my father's been sitting on this piece of property for a while. I didn't know about it till yesterday. He has a chance to sell it now with a big offer, but he'll give it to us if we want it. I really do, he said honestly, but I can't do it without you. She nodded. He wants to know by tomorrow. And I'm serious. All you have to do is be here for 6 months to open it, and after that, go back to New York if you want to, or you don't. It's up to you. I think we could be a big presence here. I don't know if I'd want to stay here, she said thoughtfully. You don't have to. We could find someone. But right now, we don't have time to find someone to open. It has to be one of us. And I think I should be in New York.
She agreed with him. He knew more about the technical side of the business than she did.
I could do it for 6 months, she said, trying to think of everything at once.
How fast would you want me here?
We'd have construction to do on the site, not a lot, but some, and I want to find a great architect to design it. They work fast here. You could go back to New York with me. Could you come back here in 2 weeks?
Sydney laughed at him as she thought about it.
You don't fool around, do you?
No, I don't. He was dead serious, and so was she. But she loved his idea. And she liked the offer and the idea of being there for 6 months with Bob without throwing her whole life out the window to do it. And she had a valid reason of her own to be here now. Fate had stepped in, just as she'd hoped. It was what she had told Bob she wanted the night before. The hand of fate to help make the decisions. And fate had just taken a hand with the piece of property Ed's father was giving them. What more could one ask? She looked Ed in the eye, and she knew it was right. This was her destiny. She had been meant to meet him at Lady Louise. It was the only good thing that had come out of it. And she had been meant to meet Paul Zeller on the plane, even if he was a crook and she got arrested and stuck in her apartment for 3 months. She had lost everything after Andrew, and now she had a chance to build something herself, with Ed. And maybe with Bob. She had met him through Ed, too. It was all a chain linked together.
I'm probably insane, but I'll do it, she answered him. 6 months. That's all I'm promising for now. We'll talk about it again in 6 months, and I'll come back to New York if I want. I'll need to be in New York for a couple of weeks to do Sabrina's wedding, she reminded him.
Of course, he agreed easily. She stuck out a hand, and he shook it as his face broke into a broad grin. She had thought about her daughters, too, but they were old enough to manage without her for 6 months. They were grown women with good jobs, and they could visit her in Hong Kong.
and she'd fly back to New York to see them.
"Are we crazy?" she asked Ed with a stunned expression.
"Maybe, but I don't think so. My father's the smartest businessman I know, and he thinks it's a great idea."
"So do I," she said.
She felt sure of it in her gut. She wasn't even scared. It felt right. He paid the check, and they left the restaurant. He dropped her off at Bob's a few minutes later, and she went upstairs, amazed by what she'd just done, but excited and pleased, too. She knew it was the right move. Bob was working at his computer when she walked in, and he greeted her with a smile.
"Welcome home."
And he looked at her, questioningly.
"What did he want?"
he asked. And she didn't know where to start for a minute. She walked toward him with an expression he'd never seen her with before. It was strength and determination, courage and excitement all at once.
"What's up?"
"I'm moving to Hong Kong in 2 weeks, for 6 months. We're opening a flagship store here. His father is giving him the location, and I'm opening it for him," she said, as a slow smile spread across her face, and he looked at her and realized what it meant for them. "I only promised him 6 months here. We'll see after that." Fate had taken a hand, right from the first, for the business, for Ed, for her, for Bob, and for their relationship. And it all started with Andrew leaving her out of his will and leaving her destitute, meeting Paul Zeller on a plane that almost crashed in the Atlantic off Nova Scotia, and meeting Ed Chin and Bob through him.
"Welcome home," he said softly again.
"Thank you." He wasn't sure if he was thanking her or the fates who had just blessed them with an incredible opportunity. Anything was possible. Anything could happen now. The dice had been rolled for all of them. The rest remained to be seen. She smiled at him as he put his arms around her. He knew just how amazing she was. She had fallen and survived it, stronger than ever before. And just when she thought all was lost, she had won. And now, so had he. The fates had been extremely kind to them, and Sidney was brave enough to reach out and seize the opportunity. They both were. He knew, looking at her, that great things were going to happen. He was sure of it. They already were. This was just the beginning. Their time had come.
The End. This is Luis Moreno. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Fall from Grace by Danielle Steele. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more, so look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.